Today's program is brought to you by the Museum of Food and Drink, sparking curiosity about food with exhibits you can eat. For more information, visit mofad.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
And I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
We are sitting with the amazing chef, humanitarian, charity founder, Chef Massimo Bottaro. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Oh. Hi, everybody.
So, obviously, most people know you for your restaurant and your work in food. But what we wanted to talk to you about today a lot was mostly your charity work. And I guess the biggest question is, you have a huge restaurant in the sense of that it's well-known, it's popular, you book out months in advance. And the pressure alone to keep that restaurant running is enough for four or five lifetimes over. At what point do you start going, I have this notoriety, I have these relationships, I want to do more. I want to do more outside of my kitchen.
I think everything we are doing now is just a reflection on what we are doing on Osteria Francescana every day. Since March 1995, when we opened. Osteria is just, is to me, a laboratory of idea. We create culture as a bottega rinascimentale. During all these years, me and Lara, we create a family in Osteria, and we live our restaurant as a family. And we develop many different ideas, but most of everything, we keep always a door open for the unexpected. Mm. You know, everything that happened, you know, we live the everyday life, but we never get lost into the everyday life. So, like that, we can, you know, wake up in the morning and confront ourselves in the mirror and say, wow, you're very lucky to being able to choose and to live a life like this. So like that, you know, you have a very positive approach of the everyday life. But we never get lost into the everyday life because we have always big dreams, you know, since the beginning. So at one point of your life, after 22 years, in which you realize everything because, you know, receive all the different, you know, prizes from all over the world.
Sure.
You know, I have a list that is long, like
you've run out
pages.
You've run out of wall space, shelf space.
Exactly. You know, it's time to give back. Mm-hmm. So culture, knowledge, consciousness, sense of responsibility. A chef with culture, with a lot of knowledge, is always been, not always, but most of the time, it's he start reflecting about his life at one point, and you know, it's time to give back because you receive so much from life that, you know, we need to share. And especially for me, that I grew up in a very social region like Regione Emilia-Romagna, in which you know, all these small producers of Parmigiano Reggiano they're getting together to become one old strong, you know, consortio, or like the same way balsamic vinegar. You know, it's like it's a region that is very social, and we are always thinking about others. You know, 3 years ago we start understanding and feeling that the chefs are much more than the sum of their recipes. Mm-hmm. And I start working on video, on project, on recipes. They became social gesture.
Yeah.
But how I arrive at this point, reading Joseph Beuys, reading Ai Weiwei, compressing into edible bites my passion. And one of my passion is contemporary art.
Yeah.
And artists like Joseph Beuys or Ai Weiwei, they're very social and they're very into, you know, sculpture and art and painting as social gesture.
Yeah.
We should never stop planting, you know, Capri battery, all this. We are the revolution. Right. We are the revolution, not me. We
as a collective.
Exactly. So this whole project of the refettorio came out because we all together create this project.
So let me ask, when you start talking about we and you start looking at your Rolodex and your contact list and things like that, how do you set it up so that it is both a clear defined message and that when you ask other people to dedicate their time, their resources, that it is not just another charity, it's not just a moment in time, it is something that is actually going to lead to bigger change.
Or,
and then in the second part of that is, what type of responsibility and pressure comes with those types of asks?
Food for Soul and the Refettorio, this soup kitchen that we open, we start opening everywhere. It's not a charity project. It's a cultural project.
Interesting.
Because we want to share with all the people, as much people as we can, and you, as a reporter, as a journalist, are the most important people.
Well,
because let me finish. Because you are in a cultural project, communicate to the world this kind of mentality.
Sure.
If you want to fight the waste. We by ourselves, we cannot fight the waste. Yep. Because the refettorio, it's about beauty. It's about, you know, we need more united people. We need more places that revive the neighbors. We need more places that restore dignity. Mm-hmm. This is about Food for Soul and refettorio. Get together and start thinking, make visible the invisible for most of the people. Getting the food, like the breadcrumbs 2 days old, or like a bruised apple, or a overripe banana, and show the world what we can do with that kind of product. They are amazing. It's not waste. Yes, it's waste for people. They don't know what to do with that kind of problem. So we use our knowledge to show the world that we can do something incredibly delicious with that kind of food, and you are the one who communicate to the world this kind of thought. So that that is the meaning of we are doing our job all together, and we are changing the world.
So let's talk about the issue, and what we see are two issues. One is food waste as just a general problem.
Yes.
But then what is really interesting and what we see Food for Soul doing is reconceptualizing how people view waste. That you're not just getting leftovers or you're not just like, the rich is, okay, I'm done with this, you can have what's left. Yeah. It's, so how have you been able to reframe it, and what issues have you come up against reframing
it? This is a perfect question. You know, when I was working at El Bulli 20 years ago, we, all together, we were there, like Andoni, Ferran Adrià, René Rezepi, we were there, and we were sharing these ideas. You know, food was becoming much more than just this kind of fine dining, you know, and you know, using this classic ingredients from the fine dining, like lamb, sea scallops, foie gras, blah blah blah. We break the wall. We broke the walls, and
I think
food.
You broke the world. Yeah. What you were doing.
Yeah. I think so. I think so. Because we realize that food was getting much deeper than just a simple meal, good or bad. That, you know, was about emotions. So emotions means, I'm traveling from New York and going to Modena, and I wanted to understand what is the idea of this territorio, no, terroir. I'm getting into the cheese makers, like small, they make two bigger wheels of Parmigiano every day, or like the 50 years old balsamic vinegar who won the gold medal and understand the culture of balsamic vinegar behind, yeah. What is behind that. You know, you want to bite that. You want to chew that kind of food and the kind of flavors and understand the culture. That's why there are plates in my restaurant like the crunchy part of the lasagna.
Right.
You know, it's about the emotion of a kid that is stealing the crunchy part of the lasagna from the big pan of lasagna that the grandmother comes on the Sunday lunch and put on the table. You know, the rest of the pan is for the adults, but the crunchy part that is the best part of the old pan of lasagna is for the kids, because they know, the kids knows that where is the emotion. The emotion is there. So those kind of plates, they play that kind of role. They transfer emotion. It's me that I want you, that you come to New York, get emotion, eating, biting, chewing, you know, this kind of food. And a crust, a Parmigiano Reggiano crust that, you know, can be like a slice very thin after it's been boiled, you know, and can be pasta or part of a broth from the Parmigiano Reggiano rind, you know, as Michel Troigros use in this kind of, you know, events. It's more emotional than a mediocre caviar or some farm-raised lobster or you know, this is the point.
It's people. It's
and
the culture.
This has been, it's been developed. This kind of concept has been developed like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Now everyone is alert on that.
Right.
And, you know, and but for me, it's like in my DNA, because I'm an Italian chef. And we grew up like that, you know?
Using everything.
Using everything, la cucina povera. I remember my grandmother was saying to me during the winter, you know, in the farm, they were like killing the pork, you know? The pork was grown close to the people, you know, and the farmers, and had a name. So the pork is giving his life to the family. And working the meat, cure the meat, boiling that, using the blood, using the nose to tail. You know, it's like, it's normal. It's just a spiritual gesture of using, the animal is giving his life to the family, to the kids. And you have to use every single bones, you know, of these animals. So this is the approach.
So, so for nose to tail has already been kind of like that allowed people to think about, oh, I'm getting everything in there, but they're still getting first use, kind of first pass on the animal. Let's say they finish with it. How are you letting people or framing people that what they get is not secondary or it's not waste or it's not lower? It's still as important as valuable.
Very simple. Yeah. You know, the French, that they have an incredible, deeply culture about food, what they do with cheese. The cheese, simple, cheese. Let's get the cheese. They have an expiration date, okay? So what they do, they know that the cheese is much better when it's aged. Yeah, it's going to be smelly in a way, but in the palate, it's amazing.
The beauty of rot.
Yes, but, you know, it's like, you know, I know exactly that a piece of Parmigiano can be expired, like, let's say, in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And but if I keep and I age it in a very good way, you know, you can have the best Parmigiano, you know, you ever taste.
Yeah.
Because, you know, meat, the way you preserve it, an ugly brown banana. But it's much better than a yellow, not even ripe banana. Because it's like, it's the way Mexican and Brazilian, they are telling us. And it's the way we learn during the whole, Universal Exposition,
right.
7 months of experience in Milan. And I could, now I'm looking at the bananas and the banana peels in a totally different way, you know, because I've learned how to work with banana peels and, you know, create a chutney or, you know, even bacon, smoking banana peels and make carbonara with banana peels instead of using bacon. Oh. You know, that's amazing, you know, but I had to learn from other people. They have a different knowledge than me and the approach to this kind of product.
So let's bring it all together. So you have the restaurant, you have the notoriety, you've been talking about these ideas with other like-minded chefs for 20 years. You and other chefs have also compiled the skills you need to take food that one might see as secondary as waste and giving it a sort of dignity, giving it respect. And now it's 2015 and there's the Milan Expo. How did you launch, how did you pitch, how did you get together this first big charity project?
That's a very good question. It was 2014 and they were talking about the theme of Expo and the opportunity that Italy had to show the world what we have, what our history. And, you know, but no one was talking about and was answering the real question. Mm-hmm. Feed the planet. So one day I saw the numbers on FAO and report, and I saw 860 million people are starving. Are like needy in the world. 1.4 at that time. Today, the new report is like 1.8. Our billion are overweight. 1.3 billion tons of food is wasted every year. 33% of the food we produce is wasted. This is incredible. Mm-hmm. This is incredible. There are peaks like Saudi Arabia is 60%. Brazil is 50%. You know, it's crazy.
Of the
food we produce.
Yeah.
So it's like, so we don't need to produce more. We need to fight the waste. So all the states and the things, they were coming and asking the chef, so you want to be involved here? You want to do a pop-up here? You want to do this? Mm-hmm. I said, no. I want to do something to tell my story, my vision of what it is, feed the planet. Mm-hmm. So I knock at the doors of every single, you know, people I knew, but no one was really getting the concept behind that because it was like an utopic idea, you know. Massimo Bottura is doing a pavilion at the Universal Exposition. There are, you know, but it's not about the money. It's about the vision, this. So you have to, you know, so what I did, I found the space. How can I find the space? I knock at the door at the of the Archbishop Scola, the Pope, and they said, yes, thank you for your energy.
Mm.
You know, we're going to meet in 1 week and I'm going to tell you what we think. 1 week later, you know, we met in Milan and he said, it's amazing. We're going to do it. Let's go and check the place. This old theater in the periphery of Milan with this guy, Don Giuliano, that is always in trouble. And so, you know, you're gonna love him.
Yeah.
So we went there. Like 1 hour later, we were there. And Don Giuliano looked at me and he said, look at the train. Behind, it's amazing. Look at the train is passing. The train is bringing you to the future. I said, in my future, there's always future. So it's like, okay, this is the right guy.
Yeah.
You know, 8 months later, we opened.
At the Expo.
At the Expo. This incredible theater that was abandoned. Like, it was the waste of architecture. You know?
Someone just closed the door.
Yes. And closed the door full of dust and rats, you know, in an amazing, beautiful thing. And, you know, the architects, they redesigned the whole space. The designer, they put amazing communal tables as the monks 500 years ago. Mm. And, you know, artists, they were like putting amazing piece of art to share with the needy that is represent culture. One big neon sign outside the thing, the cause is like, was no more excuses. Mm. It's like, stop talking. Stop. Act.
Yeah.
Act. We need action. So I, from that point, I start calling my friends. 45 minutes, I made 60 phone calls. You know, with some of them, my closest friend, I didn't even need to even call them.
They said, where?
Yes, just, is there, yeah. Is going to be with us. Like, you know, and you know, because I have a credibility.
Yeah.
I build my credibility through hard work, through good ideas. And, you know, the people knows that I don't take shortcuts. My growing is very slow, as I said before. And it was very slow. And the people knows that I'm, like, very focused on my ideas. And so they all said yes. And they all share this kind of incredible project for 7 months. We feed, like, thousands of meals for the needy. But most of everything, we transfer our knowledge to the volunteers. The volunteers, I have a baker. There is a baker there. It's a story, this. This is a very nice story. He's a guy who lost his wife. And he was very depressed in his apartment. So the daughter was trying to push him out of the apartment. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, at one point she said, "Did you hear? He's going to open a soup kitchen here. Just go there and volunteer." So we had a meeting. He came. We had a meeting before the opening. You know, there was like all these chefs coming out from Rome, from Naples, from Milan to teach the volunteer a little bit of what they had to do. So I asked, "So who knows something about bread? Who wants to be in the bakery?" No one was raising their hand. And I said, "Okay, you. Do you wanna come?" "Of course, I'm coming." So he came, and during the 7 months, he learned how to bake bread from the 65 most influential chef in the world. Every day, he was creating a new recipes with an amazing oven with stones and stuff, mother yeast. You know, amazing. Is one of the best bakers in Milan. He never, ever even touched the flour before. You know, this is the point. It's transferring our knowledge to volunteers. They're going to spread the word. So it's us, architects, designer, artists, journalists, chefs, volunteers. They were mopping the floor, washing dishes, sharing the beauty of stay together, create a community. This is Food for Soul. This is our project. We brought light in the middle of the poorest place, as we did in Rio de Janeiro. Exactly the same thing. In the poorest neighborhood in Rio, very problematic. You know, we brought a beautiful space. And we brought light.
Well, we're going to take a quick break.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about Rio. Yeah. And we're going to talk about how that happened. And we're going to talk about...
sustainability and how this keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a quick musical performance from the archives here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org. Thank you.
try to sweep away the clouds and the gloom. Daylight savings and pencil shavings. Scrawl on the wall, predictions of the fall.
Hi, I'm Dave Arnold, the host of Cooking Issues on the Heritage Radio Network. We all know and love Chinese takeout dishes like General Tso's chicken and egg rolls, but here's the thing. Even though we call it Chinese food, it's not like the food you'd find in China. What's the story behind this cuisine, and how did it become so popular that you can find a Chinese-American restaurant in nearly every town in the country? The answers may surprise you. Visit the Museum of Food and Drink in Brooklyn and see our newest exhibition, Chow, Making the Chinese-American Restaurant. Chow engages visitors with compelling accounts of how Chinese immigrants overcame racism and created Chinese-American cuisine. Discover the science behind the flavors of your favorite takeout dishes, feast on rotating tastings developed by the country's most talented Chinese-American chefs, and try your hand at writing your own fortune, which will be baked into actual cookies by a 1,500-pound fortune cookie machine. What better way to learn, connect, and eat? You can visit Chow at the Museum of Food and Drink on Fridays through Sundays from noon to 6. Tickets and more information can be found at mofad.org.
Hey, like what you hear? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. With fresh programming every week, we've got something for everyone. Trying to start your own food business? Concerned about where your food comes from? Looking for the best wine or beer to bring to a party? Find our shows on iTunes or Stitcher, or head to heritageradionetwork.org to listen live and subscribe to our newsletter.
Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are with, we'll say humanitarian, Massimo Bottura, and we are talking about his charity work and his culture revolution that he's leading through food and teaching sustainability to people all over the world. And so you had the expo in Milan in 2015. You pulled everyone together to highlight what it means to redefine food and cooking for one of the poorest neighborhoods in the world. And when the global stage was set for the Olympics in Rio in 2016, how far out from that did you realize that this would be a chance to have a additional megaphone? Like an
exactly.
On this.
You use a good word, additional megaphone.
Because, you know, doing it at the... Not everyone knows about the expo in Italy, but everyone tunes into the Olympics. And especially at a time where storytelling and, you know, the Olympics definitely have that whole culture, humanitarian... real people moment to it. How did that happen? How did you join with them? How did you make it happen? And
it was yeah. Sorry.
No,
and
I was going to say, and bringing all the chefs with like saying, okay, we did this for 7 months, sort of not under a microscope, but now we're putting this on a global stage. What came with that?
We didn't know. I didn't know what to expect, but it was okay.
Let's back it up from
the beginning.
Yeah.
5 of December, 6 in the morning, I receive a WhatsApp.
2015?
What year? 2015.
2015. Yeah.
And in which the mayor of Rio was saying that I'm your biggest fan, as you.
Can I get a reservation?
Can I get a reservation? Can I get a table? I'm your biggest fan. Can I get a table for two for my anniversary? No,
yeah.
No, it's not that.
Friday,
it's
8 p.m.
Yeah. 8 p.m., yeah. Actually, I'm going to be late. But can I have a tasting menu? And he said, you know, we need a project like yours in Milan, in Rio de Janeiro. Gastromotiva was there. Ale Forbes, another journalist, was helping us. So I look at Lara and I said, listen, they want to do a project like that in Rio de Janeiro. The mayor of Rio is here. And said, can I go back to sleep? But I answer immediately. I saw an opportunity immediately. And I answer, why not? So in a month that was following, you know, we were focusing with this no-profit organization as Gastromotiva, and with our other people, you know, to organize everything. Like Vic Munix, for example, that was the one that the artist that was the one who set up the whole. Designer and art perspective, you know, and it was, and at that point I start asking my friends, so who's gonna be during the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro? But most of everything I want to focus on local chefs, Brazilian chefs, you know, because we have to always to give the opportunity to the locals to be part of the project. I am the one who make visible the invisible, but all the others, they're gonna keep the project alive. Mm-hmm. So we start, and like that, you know, in not even, you know, one day, we had the whole, you know, schedule with dates and you know, and names. People, they were like a guy like Alain Ducasse in Paris, you know, that is more than a chef, he's an entrepreneur. And, you know, but he said, I really love the project. I love the experience in Milan, and I want to be part of Rio. So I put together all these different things, and everyone was calling me. I said, okay, maybe this, maybe that. So we focus on schedules, and we closed the program, and we went there. We start, you know, Rio was very different from Milan. Milan was very easy because it's Italy, because I knew everybody. Rio was just a jump. I was jumping in an unexpected world.
Sure.
And when I was there, I arrived at 6 in the morning. I immediately went to see the space, and there were like 100 people working, and we were extremely late. So in 5 days, we create a miracle, you know, and we were able to open at the date, like 2 days after the opening of the Olympics. But we didn't know what to expect.
Right.
So the day of the opening, there was a press conference, and there were so many journalists, but most of them locals. So we were exposed, you know, to the things. And, you know, but they didn't get this whole cultural idea behind that. They just thought, you know, we were opening another soup kitchen.
Right.
That was an revolutionary act, because like a civil revolution, you know, a civil revolution, because we were very peaceful, but we were opening soup kitchen in a moment. The mayor of Rio was closing all the soup kitchen, not to show the world the problems of the city.
Right.
You know, they were moving poor people outside of Rio de Janeiro.
Sure.
So we said, okay, let's open a soup kitchen.
Right.
And we did. And so Rio, we start like that. Then a journalist from the New York Times came, and, you know, he start a volunteer, you know, without introducing himself. You know, after he understood everything, he said, I'm going to write about you. He interviewed people, you know, and it came out an amazing piece on the New York Times. And the piece was finished. It was like ending with an interview to a couple, you know. They were saying that for the first time of their life, they've been treated like human beings.
So that dignity.
Dignity.
The dignity through the meal.
Rebuild
dignity through food.
Was our goal. Through food, through hospitality, through welcoming, through beauty. So that's the core key of our project. Rebuild dignity of the people, transfer knowledge to the volunteers, communicate to the world this kind of approach, fighting food waste. It's not a charity project. It's a cultural project. After the New York Times,
they got it. They get it. So one of the things about dignity that's really a subtle but beautiful gesture are the plates and the utensils that you use in the soup kitchens. A lot of soup kitchens you go to, it's plastic, it's disposable, it's a giveaway. But you take so much attention to detail on what people actually eat on, how you see. How did you arrive at that, and what is the philosophy behind the connection between utensils and elevating the food experience?
It's beauty. It's part of the beauty. In Milan, it was Richard Ginori, an Italian company, who gave us plates. You know, Spiegelau, a friend who was importing the glasses, who gave us glasses. Rebuilding the dignity of the people is also sitting on beautiful oak wood tables, on nice chairs, being served by smiling volunteers. They want to be part of this. And we're surrounded by beautiful art and served not as a classic soup kitchen. And that's the point. And so even the way the chefs, they care about the food, they care about the presentation, they care about serving these people and share with them. I remember Ferran Adrià was like, there was a customer, not a customer, a guest, who was complaining, but saying, you know, I don't eat cheese. And Ferran was serving this salad with cheese, so they sent it back. And Ferran was asking the volunteer, so what happened with the food? Ah, they don't want cheese, and they have a problem. So immediately he created salad for them, and he left the kitchen and served them directly at the table. Mm. So it's like, this is the approach. This is the mentality, the feeling you have to have with the things. Once you realize this, it's like you realize that you have to have plates, you have to have glasses. In Rio de Janeiro, the kids, they weren't, maybe they never tried glasses, you know, and they were, for fun, they were breaking glasses on the table. You know, it's like, yeah, that's the point, you know. That's part of the beauty that is like 360%. One of the things that we focus on Rio, this is a nice story. There were like two transvestites, part of a very big group that every night was, they were like part, they were guests. After a couple of days, they came to me in the morning. They said, Massimo, are you the boss? And I said, oh, the boss, I don't know. I'm like helping. And they said, we would love to help and be part of the team. And, I'm crazy about cleaning and, keep everything very, very well, you know. And so we hire them as cleaners, you know. We introduce them to the team that was cleaning. And, after a week, I went, I got close to them, and, we were sitting, eating a meal. And, I asked, so how you feel? And they answer, it's the first time of our life that we have two good meals every day. We have some money in the pocket, and we feel treated like human beings. And it's unbelievable. It was unbelievable. One of the best moments of my experience in Rio de Janeiro.
So,
that's again inclusive.
Inclusive.
We open in the moment. The world are building walls, like Brexit and Le Pen in France, and your president wants.
Not quite our president.
All right. We are breaking rules.
Yeah.
They're closing soup kitchen. We are opening soup kitchen.
So, speaking of opening, your next project is starting in June of this year, and you're going to be in London.
Yeah.
How are you planning for that? How are you getting ready, and how did that come to be?
And what have you learned from Milan and Rio that has influenced and taken it to a new level?
Every project has a different approach. Milan was the moment in which migrants, they start coming up from Libya, from Syria. But most of the people, they were like locals. Even people, they lost their jobs, they had a family, or divorced one father, And Rio, they were 100% locals, they were living in the street.
Mm-hmm.
Modena and Bologna, like two others, places that we have in Italy, in my hometown, and Bologna, are different too. In Modena are locals that I knew because they are part of the downtown Modena community that I know since long time before, and was kind of feeling a little bit embarrassing because to see them part in the first approach and then, you know, party or like celebration, every Monday celebration. And Bologna was family. Family of migrants, mm-hmm. refugees. And so when the kids are involved in these events and this celebration, you know, it's very easy. In London, is going to be, I don't know what it's going to be, I think they're going to be local people. They're, you know, they don't have anything, and they live, and they are part of the whole, church, life. They're going to be our guests, you know. I don't know what to expect. We are building Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful, beautiful building. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing building that Ilse Crawford right now
mm-hmm.
is restoring and redesigned. And we're placing a beautiful kitchen there. We are like, it's going to be amazing. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be very beautiful. But especially because London is such a critical point, such a big city full of biodiversity but also, you know, this kind of contradiction, tons of money in one place, nothing in another, you know, food waste for sure is big, and because the old machine and tourism and, you know, so it's, but the local chef respond in an incredible way. I'm, you know, sure. Like we have 150 requests of people they want to come, and you know, we have just 30 maybe 40 days that we have to fill. So
is the goal in opening a place here where it's only open for a month or 30 days?
No, it's not a pop-up,
no,
in Milan right now,
yeah, that's what
we are still serving 500 meals every
week. That was my
week.
Question, yeah.
And Rio de Janeiro is the same thing, is almost 100 every day. More the meals of the volunteers. They are working there. More the meal of the school that is inside the refettorio in Rio, because it's also a school who helps the problematic people from the favelas to learn a job and approach for the future, you know, with something, you know, it's different. And in London, it's gonna be, you know, this Felix project that is gonna take care of the everyday operation.
Mm.
So it's very important to have a local partner who's taking care of the everyday operation. And, you know, like we did for Modena, for Bologna, you know, if chefs are coming to Milan, are moving or passing through Rio, you know, they can go and cook, you know, and keep going. And it's all about that, about create relation, about having the right people, you know, focus on that problem. So the things that we need to understand is that we need to create sustainable, you know, places. So how can we sustain that? Selling the beauty of the place for events, for companies.
Yeah.
You know, and make money to
continue.
Be able and to continue the project.
So speaking of sustaining and transfer of knowledge, you have a book coming out.
The book. Lara is working with me and Fiden for in the fall is gonna come out a book that is gonna be called Bread is Gold. It's about the story of the 7 month you know, with 150 recipes in which all the best chefs, all the most influential chefs in the world, they're using all these an extraordinary recipes with ordinary products.
Which is amazing, because so many times
you look at books amazing,
and you go like,
amazing.
You're like, I don't have access to those ingredients.
I can't afford to buy 20 ingredients to make a chicken dish.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. With nothing. You know, pesto. Pasta with pesto. Pesto of what? Of everything. With what? With breadcrumbs. Because we didn't have any peanuts. So we use breadcrumbs instead of peanuts. And the pesto was delicious. We are making in our home, for my son that is like crazy about pesto, pesto like that.
Yeah.
With breadcrumbs instead of using peanuts now.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing and much lighter. So it's like we are creating the new tradition, and we have to communicate to the world this. So a book is extremely important. This kind of book has to be in every single family of the world that cooks, you know, because you have to see and to realize how a chef can use ordinary product and create extraordinary recipes as movies. Mm-hmm. Theaters of Life is just being bought by Netflix, and from the 1st of June is going to be shown on the Netflix, you know, and the world is going to see and is going to watch the whole idea. And, you know, as Wasted, you know, communication is important, is extremely important.
I think as we come to a close, you know, from the restaurant, from you staring at, tradition and changing it, from building these soup kitchens, from building all of these cultural revolutions, there's always been these moments in your career of facing doubt, of facing these people who are doubting what you're doing, what your food might be about. Can you make this cultural revolution? You know, and the pressures that come with people questioning, can he do it? Can people believe in the vision you have? And so I guess, how do you manage that doubt? And how do you use those people who critique from afar or don't quite understand to really improve what you're doing and the world that you touch?
It's having doubt is one of the most important thing, because that means you keep evolving. When I say my future, there's always been future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be future. Because what I did in the past is something that I already forgot. My memory, I have an incredible memory for future. You know, because in my future, I see 100, you know, soup kitchen.
Yeah.
I see an amazing Francescana. It's never been like that. My restaurant has never been like this. There are brothers and sisters that are like living with me, and they're working with me since 18 years ago, 13 years ago. And, you know, they're like sharing with me these kind of ideas. And the creativity process now is in the air. You know, you breathe them. And, you know, you are like, if you walk immediately in Monasterio Francescani, you breathe this kind of energy. And who knows what is going to be? Maybe we need more culture.
Mm-hmm.
And in my future, maybe I see a big university in the middle of the country of Modena, in an amazing villa with beautiful land all around, gardens, cheese company, balsamic vinegar,
couple
chefs, they know more, they can study more about soil, farmers, they can study more about taste, they grow together and build the future for the next generation. This is my dream.
Amazing.
Well, Chef, where can people find information on Food for Soul? How can they get involved? How can they volunteer? How can they spread the word? How can they be mouthpieces for you?
It's online and is www.foodforsoul.it and it's you just follow my Instagram, Facebook, you know. You can get everything, you know, in a website is displayed, there's a website, you know, but also in Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, you know, you can follow Food for Soul and everything. You know, I keep receiving messages from all over the world of people. They want to volunteer, they want to be part of this project, they want to share, you know. We got in contact with United Nations like that. They saw the project, they came to Modena, they want to be involved in this whole idea and open in Africa, maybe Burkina Faso, who knows. But also we have the Rockefeller Foundation here in New York. They love the project, they want to share with us this kind of project, and you know, they're like, they gave us a grant to study the possibility to develop many different soup kitchen, as I say, refettori, here in United States. And I would love to open one in New Orleans for music. The city has been hit by a big, tremendous earth, you know.
Yeah, the hurricanes.
Or like Detroit. Mm-hmm. That, you know, the crisis and the things, and especially the rock and roll. Yeah. So it's an art community that is getting together in Detroit. You know, Miami, Denver, Denver is going to be the new capital of slow food. You know, there's so many things that are very interesting that are happening in the United States. Bronx.
Yeah.
The poorest community in the United States. I would love to do it with San Barnaby Hospital. You know, maybe they're going to be our partner for the future, and the next seeds is already being planted, you know?
Well, Chef, we can't thank you enough for all the work you've been doing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, guys, to find the time to come here and, you know, talk with me.
Our pleasure. We appreciate it. We're going to have one last track from the archives. Thank you for joining us on Snacky Tunes.
And we'll be back next week with a new episode.
Yeah, on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you. watch out to the
talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Heritage_Radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.